Welcome to the Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to the Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and I'm actually going to be honest with you now.
Yeah.
I'm not really that happy.
I thought you might be like that this week.
Yeah.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
Because this week, of course, is our DPW special.
So DPW, what's that stand for? Deluxe Posh Wine?
Digital Procurement World.
Oh, not Polishing Weekly, no, nothing like that? Not Don't Push Wally? No.
And it took place in Amsterdam in October.
I'm not interested.
You will be when you hear what I did there. DPW, possibly the foremost conference and digital tech showcase in the industry.
Yes.
And I think this year's event was, well, I describe it as exceptional because everybody there, everyone there had some sort of procurement tech to offer, including Positive Purchasing. We were there. Also, CPOs from some of the world's biggest companies rocking up to take a look. It was incredible.
Yeah, but the correction is somebody wasn't there.
And who wasn't there?
Me.
Yeah.
In fact, in the interest of full disclosure, I do recall I actually had the event in my calendar quite some time.
You did.
Then I had a phone call saying, you're no longer required.
Well, the thing is, I don't think Amsterdam was quite ready for you.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine the bar bill?
True. That's true. There's only so much you can claim at the end of the day, isn't
there? And all those special clubs you like to visit.
Yes, that's true as well.
But I did carry your photograph wherever I went. Yep. And I talked to lots of people.
Well, you did a very good job because you became our procurement show roving reporter.
Yeah, I did. I wandered around with a microphone and interviewed lots of people. I did a special
edition. And you didn't get arrested once, did you?
Not inside the venue, but I did a special edition of The Procurement Show live from there with Michelle Baker, CPO of Virgin Money, which we're going to hear shortly.
Fantastic. All right. So in all seriousness, let's find out a bit more about DPW, especially for those like me who were unable to attend.
Well, I can do better than that. Let's hear from the founder and the event organizer first. Matthias Gutzmann, you're the founder of DPW, probably the foremost procurement tech conference exhibition worldwide. How's this year been for you?
Yeah, amazing. It feels like every year we are taking the conference to the next level and we are putting incredible work into this. The good thing is I have a team now. 2 years ago, even last year, was a small team, and now we are growing, so it makes my job easier. But yeah, it's a 40% increase in corporate attendees, so we see more corporates coming in, bringing their teams of 10 to up to 20 people even. We have more stages. We are reinventing the event every year, and yeah, I'm super happy.
And this year the theme is 10 times procurement. What exactly does that mean?
So last year the theme was make tech work, and it was really about getting the basics right, on making tech work. And this year we thought, let's take it to the next level and focus on the scaling part. And 10x is really around how to apply a moonshot mindset in AI to drive exponential outcomes. So it's a 10% versus 10x notion here. And now it's a very, maybe, fluffy theme, but we think it's the right mindset. And overall, and I think in the first place, 10x is a mindset. It starts with a massive transformative purpose. It's finding the North Star, and it's all around leadership. And AI really underpinning that and making it work.
And what's the single biggest takeaway that you've seen from these 2 days so far?
It's the people, it's the energy, and it's the excitement around procurement. And, you know, I know we keep saying this, it's the best time to be in procurement. I think the best time is yet to come with all the technology coming through. But, you know, the challenge will be for the corporations to bring it to life, ultimately, and to manage the now, which is a crazy world we're living in. A lot of change, a lot of inflation, a lot of supply chain disruptions. At the same time, also thinking about building the future operating model. And finding that balance, I think, is a challenge for a CPO.
So now I really would like to know a bit more about it. What kind of things were people talking about? I can imagine there would have been a lot of exciting new tech as well on display.
Oh, so much tech. I think this event is the barometer of what's happening in the industry, and lots and lots of tech there. Lots of AI. Sorry, I've got to mention it early on. And some, you know, really exciting use of AI. Some, it's just got the AI label. We've talked about that. It was talking this time a lot about how procurement needs to transform. We heard Matthias talk about procurement needs to be 10 times and needs to become this high-performing function using tech, using AI to enable that. But crucially, what I was hearing people talk about was how tech enables rather than replaces good procurement. So there is a real focus on how you transform the function to be much more high performing, what we need to do, because we're at this precipice of change in many ways. How to drive that change, and crucially, how to build the capability to utilize and embed the technology. And there are some familiar faces there. You remember Philip Ideson came on the podcast a few months ago? He was there. Eloise Epstein, she came on a few months ago. And the event was opened by Remco van Hoek, who's the professor of supply chain management at University of Arkansas. Great opening speech.
Thank you.
You were telling us in that about how procurement has to change. Tell me how you think procurement has to change moving forward.
We're going to make a massive transformative leap forward by moving beyond focusing on just the operational and the productivity and the purchase orders and getting out of the spreadsheets by focusing more on strategic sourcing, supplier relationship management, and massively leaning on the opportunity to deploy new technology, including AI.
And what's the single thing that a CPO needs to be doing today to be ready for that?
Open to experiment and embrace opportunities to learn, to try out new things. And the good news is, it doesn't have to be expensive.
Philip Ideson from The Art of Procurement. I've just bumped into you. Just before you go onto main stage, are you having a good DPW 2024?
Yes, so far so good. It's busy. There's a lot of folks around here, lots of technologies on show. Enjoying the conversations, enjoying catching up with people that I haven't seen face to face for a long time. So far so good.
And what's the single biggest thing you're seeing, the mood? What's happening in procurement right now? How would you sum that up?
I think there's just a great energy around driving change. You know, I think that in procurement, we've spent a lot of time with a status quo, and the status quo being okay, and almost kind of wishing for change, but I think it's no secret that we've changed slowly. I think what's really energizing here is that there's a lot of talk about what can we do differently, and now the technology is catching up with our vision of what procurement can be, and so that's great to see.
Finally, what is the single thing you think a CPO should be doing right now?
If they haven't done it, they should be connecting all of their organization with the goals of the business. It sounds pretty fundamental, but still, that's one of the biggest problems and disconnects that I see. It doesn't matter how much you focus on people, how much you focus on process, on technology, on data. If you're not architecting the capability of your team to really meet the needs of the business, then you're doing it for your own benefit, not for the benefit of the folks that you work for. So I think that that's fundamental, but it's still the number one thing that we need to make sure is in place before you invest in anything else.
Philip Ideson, thank you very much. Good luck on the main stage any minute now. I've just tracked down the legend that is Eloise Epstein. Eloise, are you having a good DPW this year?
I am having a fantastic DPW. I am so happy to be here. I've seen so many people that friends, colleagues. It's just like a reunion.
What is your number one thing you want to get out of this session?
I want to network and just get to know folks, especially in the next generation, which there's a lot of young people here, and I love that. But second is to just continue to see how all these startups have evolved. And third, just to experience procurement being cool. Procurement is the greatest function in the enterprise, and DPW actually celebrates that. And when you walk in here, you're inundated with coolness, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I've been 30 years in the industry, and I think it's cool. One final question. How would you sum up tech development in procurement?
We are at an inflection point because the AI platforms on which all of this tech is being built or will be built is going to be fundamentally transformational and different than anything we've ever seen before.
And it's great to hear from some previous guests of the show. Of course, if you look back over the archive of the procurement show, you'll be able to catch up with our interviews with Philip Ideson and Eloise Epstein, of course.
Yeah, one of the themes that emerged from the event was no matter how good the tech is, we cannot afford to ignore how we're continuing to develop the capability of our people. We heard from Vanya Petrovic from Coca-Cola about the importance of learning and development in procurement. Why is learning so important within Coca-Cola for procurement?
Well, I think being here at DPW is a great example of why it's never been more important, because we live in an age where new technology is popping up all the time. And as procurement practitioners, we just need to appreciate that our people, our users, our stakeholders are being introduced to new technology from every single direction. It's not even just the procure tech that we're launching and implementing. They're getting new HR tools, they're getting new finance tools, so there's a lot of change going on. And to make sure that we are implementing the right tools in the right way, I think learning communications, and it's never been more important for the adoption and getting the value out of the technology that we're investing in. So one of the first things that we traditionally see being cut out of budgets for project implementations is, well, can we do less change? Can we do less comms? Can we do less training? But in hindsight, that is one of the most important things that we all need to focus on before even launching any type of technology. And some of us are better at that than others, and some of us have bigger budgets than others. But it is incredibly important not to lose sight and to keep a focus on learning and development and making sure that our people are comfortable with the technology and that we are not oversaturating the market. And having a little bit of a reality check on what is needed at what point in time. Not everybody needs to know everything.
Did you get a feel for the problems that those in procurement are facing and how they're approaching solving those issues?
Yeah, they were quite many and varied, actually. It wasn't everybody's got the same problem. The people I talked to all were sort of citing different things. And although the underlying challenges were the same, people were actually looking for quite different solutions, or they believed that they needed quite different solutions. So let's hear from some.
Parasu Deliveroo, what is the single biggest challenge you have in procurement right now?
Keeping up with the pace of change, I think. There's so much change in this profession. You know, it only feels like 10 to 15 years ago, we were talking about how to move towards SRM and other things in supplier management. And now we're just talking about totally transforming everything digitally, and how much can we not put through digital? That's the real question. So I think that's the biggest challenge I see.
Stefano Di Mario, Angelini Pharma, what is the biggest issue you have in Angelini Pharma right now today that you need a solution for?
Oh, wow. Good question. Actually, we are transforming our company procurement into a group procurement, because Angelini is actually dealing with pharma, but it's also a broader ecosystem of companies. So now we are switching from a company procurement to a group procurement, so dealing with different industry in a lean way. And actually, AI and artificial intelligence may help in connect and collect all these kind of needs, trying to address procurement issues and challenges in the future.
Tristan Hext, Foodbuy, what is the number one challenge you've got with your team today?
I'll probably have two. Number one is we're going for a massive growth transition at the moment, huge. And I think aligning the businesses that we're procuring and the businesses that we have already at the moment with our wider strategy is really hard.
Yeah.
And then the co-part to that is just aligning the data. It's so hard. Data is the biggest problem we're ever going to have, and I think it's very much a procurement 101 challenge, so I feel a bit generic, but that'll be the second one.
The Procurement Show, exploring the more interesting bits about procurement. And now, the procurement fun fact. This edition's exciting tale of preposterous procurement, bizarre buying, or simply saucy sourcing.
A supplier bidding to be the new marketing agency to a multinational company with its procurement HQ based in Dublin, Ireland, decided to try and be creative when it came to the final round of supplier negotiations. With all the preliminaries complete, all that remained was to agree the final fee structure and how some terms would work. The marketing agency suggested, as is tradition in Ireland, that discussions were concluded down the pub.
I like that idea.
Little did the buyer know that the supplier had set the whole thing up, with all the staff and regulars being paid actors and singers. As discussions moved on, suddenly a customer sat at the bar turned and started singing, followed by other customers, then the bar staff, and finally the entire pub were singing a specially composed song about everything the partnership would bring. We don't know exactly how this was received, but the company did eventually win the contract.
Do you know what that's called?
What?
That's called a flash mob.
Yes, it is. Mm. It is, yeah. So they arranged a flash mob as part of the final negotiation.
Yeah.
The procurement fun fact. Contact us by email. hello@theprocurementshow.com. Send us a tweet @procurementshow. Or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show.
Okay, so now I think it's time we heard some of the apparently special edition Procurement Show recorded live at DPW, which I must add was recorded without me. You were the first podcast of day one, premier podcast, without me. Am I making a point now?
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at here.
Thank you, Jonathan. Just let me finish my line. And in your special podcast booth by the main entrance, once again, which was without me, you interviewed Michelle Baker without me.
Without you. But you were present in my heart, Paul.
Thank you.
Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hi, and welcome to DPW 2024 podcast. I'm Jonathan O'Brien. Welcome also to the Procurement Show podcast, because this will also be part of that podcast as well. So today, my guest describes herself as a super energetic, fast-talking person and a transformative CBO. She works in a highly regulated business and knows a thing or two about how to make strategic procurement really, really work. She's also the CEO and founder of a procurement advisory called Eucalyptus, get that, and she's passionate about getting the organization to understand, embrace, and value procurement. Please welcome the CPO of Virgin Money, Michelle Baker. Michelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you here. And we're going to talk about, is procurement undervalued and can tech help? So the first question, does procurement need to be better valued?
Absolutely. Now, I've been in procurement quite a long time now, and I've kind of grown up with procurement. And the thing that's always struck me is how much of a positive and profound impact a good procurement function can have on corporate outcomes, on business outcomes. And yet so often we come with a begging bowl to ask for some crumbs, a seat at the table, some funding,
yeah,
in a way that our sales colleagues just do not. And one of the things that strikes me about the sort of economics of it all is every dollar we save or avoid spending is a dollar in the bank,
yeah,
whereas a salesperson always has a margin to have to deal with. So if you've got a 30% margin, only 70% of that amount of money is being banked. And that for me seems a tremendous waste and a tremendous shame. So I profoundly believe procurement is undervalued, and I feel it's my mission to change that.
Well, it's a really good mission to have. And it's interesting that you talk straight about the cost dimension and the pressure we're under to just get the numbers in.
Yeah.
So it seems that we've got to have a strategic approach to doing this. So what do you think is the most important strategic thing a procurement function needs to do?
I think there's two aspects to it. I think, first of all, as a leader in the procurement function, you have to have a vision of what your procurement function can do for your business. And that will differ according to the industry. And then you need to speak your business's language.
Yeah.
It's really, really important that you're not speaking procurement gobbledygook. As soon as you speak savings, your finance colleagues start to say, well, where do I see that in the budget?
Yeah.
And that's a very, very difficult answer to formulate. So I think you've really got to learn to understand the value of your procurement function and then speak the language of your business and understand how you can make that impact. That will then give you the permission to go and have the right sorts of conversations with the business. But of course, if your procurement function isn't doing the basic things of saving money and managing the supply base effectively, you're probably not going to get the opportunity to have those conversations.
And there can easily be such a disconnect with how the organization does that. I remember working with one organization where the CPO stood up in a town hall meeting and said, hey, we've saved 1 million euros. And the CFO then stood up and said, well, that's lovely. Where is it? I can't see it on the bottom line. And, you know, if you have that sort of disconnect, then, you know, it's not going to work. So clearly the business expects savings. But is there anything else that you think the business expects procurement to be doing?
I do think there's an expectation that we manage the supply base. And I think that that expectation has become greater and greater over time. So managing the supply base previously was probably just a case of getting a great deal. Now we have post-signature contract lifecycle management, we have supplier relationship management, and increasingly matters like DEI, ESG, third-party risk management, particularly in regulated financial services organizations, to have to consider. And invariably, you're finding a home for those considerations in a procurement function. And the allegations that the supply base isn't being managed effectively usually sits with the CPO as the party most to blame for that. So I think that's kind of been a changing dynamic beyond just savings that I've seen in my 2.5 decades in procurement.
Yeah, and it's so easy that there can be a sort of conflict there. It takes one small thing, in my experience, one small thing for somebody in the business to say, well, you know, procurement aren't doing this, and actually that small thing may be a product of many, many things, and it's just part of how we do business. So there's a bit around how we get that conversation going, I think, and what can we do? How do we get that dialogue going with the business, but also with the senior team as well? What do you need to do to get that moving?
You have to build a relationship. I mean, any consultancy organization will tell you if you're not building the relationship with your client base, you're probably not going to be getting the relationship sales that could accrue. So I think it's really important as a procurement practitioner to get out of the back office. You can't be sitting counting your shekels and hoping that you're going to have a positive impact, which means that you have to spend time with your technologists, you have to spend time with your marketing team, you have to spend time with the HR and particularly the finance organizations, understanding how they see their problems and then what is the solution that you can offer to those problems. I think all too often, again, we think that savings are the most important thing, and that obscures the ability to have a decent conversation.
Yeah.
What I do, you can probably tell I'm somebody who, you know, enjoys a conversation, is I spend a lot of time investing in the relationships that I have with colleagues to try and understand what contribution they are trying to make to a positive business outcome, and then how the supply base and our management collectively of the supply base can help seek that outcome.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to echo what you say, my experience, that relationship bit is the single most important thing that a procurement function has to do. Get that bit right, everything else happens. Fail to do that, and you're back to what we said now, that the conflict. And there's another dynamic that I'm seeing, which is this expectation that tech will solve everything, and suddenly you don't need a relationship because actually human beings aren't quite in the picture anymore. Now, got to be careful what we say, because we're at DPW 2024. This is the foremost tech exhibition for procurement and supply chain in the world.
Yep.
I guess the question is, if we're in this tech storm, is that a distraction right now, or what should we be doing? And what do you think that the organization needs and expects of procurement in terms of tech?
So look, I think good old bog standard sourcing strategies are maligned. I think really understanding what you need to buy and whether you should be making it is basic brass tacks that you should be following. So it is the Wild West out there. I have been buying technology for a very, very long time, and we are in a bubble, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic bubble, because I do truly believe that generative AI, large language models, and how we can utilize those to coin Microsoft's proprietary term, co-pilot, an accomplice, if you will, it's going to change the face of work. So in the same way as we went from typing pools to a world populated with PCs. So I think we're seeing a very, very big shift in the way in which human beings use technology. But there's also a lot of marketing material out there that says AI, AI, AI. And while some of that is probably partially true, it may be immature. It may not do what it says on the tin. And I think it's really important for a good procurement function to have the mechanism to say, well, why do we need to buy this? You know, what is the sourcing decision here that enables the business outcome? And if so, how do I then sift the marketing material from what is reality? And that, for a lot of procurement practitioners, is going to be a learning curve.
Yeah.
So we are all going to have to learn once again how to use a new type of technology in the way that we have with WhatsApp, in the way that we have with getting a smartphone, in the way that we have with booking our holidays. We no longer go to a travel agent. So I do think that human beings have the learning agility to be able to make this change.
Yeah.
But if you make it an institutional change, it will be more difficult than if you can make it a personal change. So as a sourcing practitioner, I would urge you to get out there and really understand what's happening in the technology space in and around your industry sector, not just helping the procurement function, but in and around your industry sector, stuff is happening.
Yes.
That is AI informed.
Yeah.
What is it? Who stands to benefit most, and what impact can it have on your business? So that's just basic procurement 101. As a person, as a human being, I would say, get yourself up a learning curve. You know, once upon a time, no one could touch type, and now everybody can touch type because you need to. So I think we've all got to learn what this AI thing could mean for our world to come, because it is going to profoundly change it. And then I would say, as a leader of a function, get out there and have those conversations with your business. Your business is thinking exactly the same thing about, what is this AI thing? How can it help me in HR? How can it help me in finance? And there are a lot of people knocking on doors saying, how can we show you our new shiny thing? A good procurement organization will help discern the lead from the true golden orbs.
Yeah. There are two things that really fascinate me with what you've just said. I'm going to come back to those two letters in just a moment. But you talked about how in Virgin Money you're using Microsoft Copilot to get behind things. That's a really interesting shift, because if you walk around this exhibition, if you look at the tech that's out there, there's lots of brilliant little pieces of tech. And one of the risks, one of the things I've seen in recent years, is islands of technology. Some of them are really good. Some of them are shiny things that promise a lot and really don't do it, you know, and there's a shakeout happening right now. But you've got these little islands of tech which do something. And a lot of organizations have built a strategy based on buying those. And then you've got these, I guess, foundation things like Microsoft Copilot. Microsoft Teams did that, you know, as we came out of COVID or during COVID. All of a sudden, hey, there's this thing that pretty much takes care of a bunch of collaboration stuff. And that instantly put a bunch of small players that have been playing on the periphery of that out of business. So we see these sea changes in technology where the underpinning technology allows people to be more productive, more collaborative, and to get stuff done and share stuff. So, I mean, that approach is fascinating. And I think ahead of what many are doing, because I think many are still buying those islands of technology. But let's come back to, you know, you mentioned the AI words. Yeah, every stall here will have an AI something. Some of it is really genuine and groundbreaking, and some of it is just, hey, we've got to say AI because if we don't, we're going to be left behind. But, you know, I'm going to be a bit provocative here. Is AI going to replace the procurement human?
I'd like to think not, but I think there are certain job classes that are more prone to replacement by technology than by humans. If you're a relationship-driven procurement practitioner, I don't think you've got any risks. If you're somebody who crunches numbers in the background, a large language model's ability to see the patterns and the insights from those patterns is probably going to be a whole lot more effective than the 7 bits of data we told our human brain can accommodate at any one time. So I do think in time we will see the disappearance of certain types of human-performed work because artificial intelligence will just be better at it than we are. So, for example, I mean, here's a use case. The old market scan. Yeah. So you do a market scan. We want to buy something along these lines. Do I have access to a third party that allows me to do the market scan? Probably not. Do I have the time to do it? Pop your query into Copilot or ChatGPT, and within, you know, less than a second, you've got 10 names of credible propositions within a very niche area, potentially. And I've tested it. So if you think about that from a sourcing perspective, all of a sudden you've got 10 names, you can find out about mergers, acquisitions, divestitures in that entity, how long have they been going, what's their pedigree, who's their CEO, what's their financial performance, all within milliseconds.
Yeah.
So that puts a procurement organization on steroids, and you know, this is the kind of thing that I find tremendously exciting, but we have to know how to use the tool.
Yeah.
They talk a lot about human in the loop, and most of the human in the loop is about verifying the veracity of the data that the black box of a large language model spits out. I mean, we all know that there are hallucinations. So I do think that there's a sort of sensible force that humans can bring over the top of what gets spat out. But as a starter for 10 and getting you to 80% of a sourcing strategy, 80% of a category strategy, 80% of a vendor strategy, it is a remarkable little friend to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, and I think the other dimension with that, of course, is we're going to need a different type of human. We're going to need a human that can do that stuff, not the crusty old procurement person of the past.
I'm not sure that I completely agree with that. This is probably a little bit provocative, but being my age, I've seen a lot of technological shifts. I saw a meme the other day that said Gen X is angry because we had to invest in all of our vinyl records, and then we had to replace them with CDs, and then we had to replace them with MP3, and now we have to pay a subscription to be able to get our music. No wonder Gen X is angry, which resonated with me. But all of those technological shifts I've lived through, and I just accommodated those. I didn't at any point say, well, you know, can I cope with this change? Can I learn how to use a smartphone? Can I learn how to use text messages or WhatsApp or a banking application? I didn't question any of that learning agility. I just did it. And the point is, we've all just done it. So I don't think it needs a different kind of human. I just think it needs a human that is curious and alive about the world in which we find ourselves and what this new technology can offer us in the same way as we've gone through technological shifts over the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm a Gen Xer that's still got my vinyl collection, and I'm very, very proud of that as well.
It's time to Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Tristan Hex from Foodbuy, who you met at DPW. Mm-hmm. Actually, perhaps we should let him ask the question.
How do I navigate procurement technology whilst avoiding the AI buzzword and picking the right AI products that will actually future-proof my business?
Can you ask an easier question?
Great question, Tristan. Thank you for that. And, you know, we've talked about AI and the sort of buzzword overhype thing quite a bit. The first thing to do really is to be really clear about what the AI is actually doing. So cut through the claims in any piece of tech, understand what exactly the AI is doing. Because actually, when you look at a lot of tech that's out there, most of it isn't doing anything with AI, but there'll be a thing on the side, a little bot, a little feature or something that'll go and do some sort of lookup. And so it's not really using it, but there's a little thing that makes the claim. So you've got to get behind what AI is actually doing. And I think separately to that, rather than being supplier-led in terms of what suppliers are serving up to you, you also need to have a strategy in terms of how is AI going to help the procurement function? And think about all the different ways that it does that. So that would include things like using it for data analytics, using it for very complex analysis of data, developing your category strategy, using things like the Capella tool, or generative AI to perhaps communicate output, develop procurement plans, supplier plans. So think about the role of AI at a sort of what do you want it to do, and then match that against what technology is offering. But you've got to lead this in terms of how you want AI to power your function rather than be led by what the suppliers are telling you.
Nice answer. And if you've got a question for Jonathan, you can either grab him in the street or get in touch, and here's how.
Which is easier.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show. The latest thinking, the greatest insights.
You talked briefly about numbers there. Let's talk about budgets, because in all the time I've worked in procurement, procurement's been about how can you help but the budget? How can you save money? And people are motivated based on savings and savings alone. Slightly changing in that ESG is now playing a part of that. But if we're going to have an effective procurement team, then does procurement need to be part of how organizations set budgets and motivate people?
Yes, absolutely. It is, again, about talking the financial language. So budgets are set for a reason. We have targets, we have performance numbers, and I think it's really, really important that procurement understands how those budgets have been set, what challenges those budgets were put to, and then what gaps exist in the budget. I mean, financial organizations typically run hot, run cold, are risk-averse or not risk-averse, depending on the industry. And I think you've really got to understand how your finance colleagues have worked with the business to come up with a number or a purse in which a particular business unit has to operate. And then I think more strategically, how do we as a procurement function then look horizontally across the numbers, because each division has their own number, to try to think about the aggregation of spend opportunities so that we can get a number that is enterprise-wide rather than divisionally split. That's an art as well as a science, and I think you've really got to have the zoom-out perspective of what's the budget in the big, and the only way that you do that is to have a close relationship with your finance organization and the folks who are monitoring the budget, and then keep a close eye on that on a monthly basis. What's the gap in the budget? How do you think you can close it? What can we do jointly to try and figure that out? Sometimes that's, in fact, most times, that's a joint initiative. Procurement has to do a little bit of stuff here. The business had to do a little bit of stuff there, particularly around demand management. But if you can get that triumvirate of your finance business partner, the colleague that you're supporting, and procurement into the same dialogue, speaking the same language, referring to the same numbers, that's a beautiful relationship to getting great outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. And back to human relationships again as well. Now, you describe yourself as a transformative CPO, which implies you've got the ability to get people to follow you on that journey because you can't do it alone. So how do you do that? How do you inspire your team to follow you? What do you do?
I talk, but I know others do as well. I talk about visionary leadership. And by that, I actually meant a very simple thing. It is impossible to lead if you cannot create a vision. And the vision is purely, where are we going? And so you have to fire up somebody's imagination to say, imagine if we could, and then fill in the blanks. And that is, you know, maturity dependent. It is personality dependent. It depends on how advanced your procurement function is, how able your company or your industry is to absorb a more strategic or a more thoughtful procurement capability. And that does differ. You know, I've done this across a number of industry verticals right now. The only thing that doesn't change across all of those verticals and all of those industries is the human beings that populate them. Yep. And so you've got to get into the heart. Any marketeer will tell you this. You've got to find the passion for people to go, I see myself. The analogy I use is always like going on a holiday. So where are we going? Are we going to Cape Town or are we going to Timbuktu? let's pick and let's go there together. And then we'll decide how we're going to get there. And, you know, we might decide to begin with we're going to go by bicycle, but that's not working out so well. So we might have to pivot to a train or something along those lines. And that really, for me, is how you've got to, as a leader, set a destination jointly with your team, create a belief that that's a good destination to go to, and then get people on the bus. You know? So how do we all get there together? And aren't we excited about this? And so I'm looking for ways that I grow better capability in my team, because I'm a great believer in strengths rather than weaknesses.
Yep.
So if I can make you be a superpower in your strengths, I'm going to get the best out of you and you're going to get the best out of yourself. So constantly looking from a talent development perspective, how I can create your next best opportunity for your superpowers, and what can I do as a leader to facilitate that journey. Branson has that famous quote attributed to him, which is, what happens if we train people and they leave? And his retort being, what happens if we don't and they stay? That's one of the responsibilities I feel very, very deeply as a leader, is create the vision, create some dot points, create reasons to believe that that's a destination worth making the journey for, and then help people get on the bus so that they're equipped for the journey. And unfortunately, there's going to always be folks that don't want to get on the bus.
Yeah. And I had the honor of meeting Richard Branson very recently and actually seeing him in action, just seeing how he inspires his team. And he absolutely does that. Everybody just follows him because he says, you know, that's what we're going to do. And they just get behind him. And I love the analogy of being on holiday, because we so easily fall into the trap of saying, hey, we're going to one destination. But actually, we're not. We're going to London, Stockholm, New York. Maybe next week it'll be Beijing. And perhaps actually it's all changed. We're going to Sydney.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what procurement's been like over the last 5-10 years. You know, there's no one thing. It pivots, it pivots, it pivots again. But, you know, if we're going to transform procurement, we've talked about how we do it internally. What about the supply base? Does transforming procurement mean that we've got to change the supply base in some way?
I think it goes again to the enterprise strategy. I really do think somewhere in your organization, your business has a strategy that's been written down. And unpicking and unpacking that revenue inflection, risk management, cost management dynamics that your CEO and his or her leadership team have is a helpful start to understanding what the supply base can do in service of that mission. As I said earlier, going back to brass tacks of, do we need to make this or can we buy it? And being crisp with the leadership team on, why are we buying all of the staff augmentation when actually it's going to be a steady state of FTEs? We should rather be hiring talent and building that talent so that we've got it in-house, as an example, yeah, in the resource planning. So I don't think fundamentally the supply base needs to change, but we do need to be cognizant that this emerging technology will have an impact on all of our suppliers, and ask Copilot or ChatGPT what the impact might be, because that can be extraordinarily illuminating. You know, it's going to get simultaneously much more complex and also much more simple. We're seeing a lot of aggregation. There's going to be, as we've seen with previous technological shifts, consolidation. Bigger whales will swallow smaller minnows.
Yeah.
There will be an evolving culture. You know, large language models are not cheap to run. So those with deep pockets are more able to provide something that is useful. Ben Thompson, the blogger from Stratechery, writes quite interestingly about ChatGPT becoming a platform, APIs into the platform. And I think we will probably also see ChatGPT over closed data sets. So, you know, intra-corporate. That's a bit of a change. So all of this data that's been digitized, could we finally harvest something from it? Could we mine it and prospect and get something out of it? I think possibly we might just find out that there's a lot of garbage in there and far more hallucinations than we'd like.
I'm seeing that, because for the LLMs to work, they've got to learn on good stuff. And actually all the good stuff is commercially confidential in the companies that have done good stuff. So it doesn't learn from that. So you end up with this garbage in, garbage out thing. But I'm seeing a rise in companies having wall-gardened AI environments, whether it's within Microsoft or a ChatGPT environment or something else. We've done that as well. But it means that suddenly if you know you've got a good data set, you don't let anyone else get advantage of that. You keep that advantage, but at the same time you allow the power that AI can bring if it's used well. That brings me to one of the final questions, which is sustainable procurement. What are you doing in Virgin Money around sustainable procurement? Is it a priority, and how are you doing it?
As a corporation operating in today's world, we can't not be sustainable.
Yeah.
Our footprint is primarily bank branches and head offices and data centers, so primarily carbon emissions. So we have declared targets to the market and are closely tracking to those targets, so that's encouraging. And increasingly, putting the onus upon our supplier base to have science-based targets themselves. So working more with suppliers who are committed to ESG and environmental considerations is of great priority to that. And that's a standard part of our RFP process now, and a set of supplier conditions that we ask for in any supplier that we want to bring into our ecosystem.
It's been fascinating. We started talking about, is procurement undervalued? And I think you very clearly said, absolutely it is. And we've covered a lot of ground on that. What are the three takeaways from what we've discussed today?
Relationships with the business is the most important skill that any procurement practitioner could and should be developing. We all have to learn the new tool set because it is going to profoundly change our lives. And we, in a very, very chaotic world, run the risk of overcomplicating things. We don't need more inundation with data and complexity. Dumb it down a little. Make it simple. Yeah. Go on a holiday. Think about make versus buy. If you can try to make things more of a binary, you'll help navigate the path through, do I go left or do I go right, much more effectively than if you go, oh my goodness, what do I do about AI, which is an insolvable problem.
Michelle Baker, CPO of Virgin Money and CEO and founder of Eucalyptus, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the DPW 2024 podcast and the Procurement Show podcast. It's been an honor to hear what you've
had
to
say. Thank you so much, Jonathan. It's been a delight to be here.
So it's clear you had a really good time at DPW without me. But actually, in all seriousness, one of the recurring themes is AI. Inevitably, it's not going to go away. One of the ways that you challenge any fears about AI is the fact that we still need to rely on relationships, one-to-one relationships, human to human. I guess that makes events like this all the more important.
It is important. Relationships are, of course, important, but it's also important to cut through the AI hype because everybody's doing AI. And wherever you look to DPW, people are talking about AI. And some of it is a really powerful glimpse into how AI will transform procurement, whether it's being used for analytics, quality of data, generative AI in terms of the sort of strategies that we're outputting. But there's also everybody else claiming it because you've got to claim it. You know, my dog's doing AI.
Yes.
So that's the thing. You've got to get behind what is and what isn't and how AI is actually going to transform and power your procurement. But you remember we had Kath Harmister on the show.
Yeah.
She said something that stuck in my mind. She said, you've got to look at AI as one of the team. It's not a tool that you bolt on. It's one of the team. It's there to help you do the stuff you need to do. And you have to work with that team as part of the team. So the human relationship thing is absolutely paramount. And by the way, a lot of the conversations I had, people were saying things like, we've kind of got so lost chasing the shiny things, we've forgotten about training people, developing people. So there was a lot around, we need to get back to people and then bring AI into how that helps.
So with regards to AI and procurement, certainly the procurement marketers, I don't want you to name names, but did you see actual examples of that at the show?
I saw some examples which were really quite embryonic and basic and actually quite childlike, if I'm honest. And I saw other examples where people are really starting to do a couple of interesting things with AI. It's not there yet, but you can see where it's going. But as with AI and the use of AI in general, you've got to know how to use it. You've got to know how to use it well. It's not a thing you just plug it on and tell it what to do. You've got to train people and have people familiar, even down to prompt engineering and how you're going to make sure you get the right results from it. And that's why it's still early days, but you can see where it's heading.
And it's all very well, you say this, our guests on previous episodes of The Procurement Show will say it, but you've had the opportunity to network and talk and discuss these and many other subjects with others in the procurement industry. Mm-hmm. What's the actual general consensus of opinion? How would you read the room with regards to the future?
Ooh, that is a really tough question. I think that we are about to change dramatically. And I think there's a recognition that tech with AI is at the center of this. And I think organizations are still trying to figure out, how do we do this? So everybody knows they've got to be doing a tech thing. And they know that actually procurement in 5 years' time isn't going to be what it's like today. So everyone's trying to figure out, how do we do that and what the solution is? So I think that is the single biggest challenge and the single thing that CPOs seem to be wrestling with. How do I actually navigate the next 5 years?
Okay, so you obviously had the opportunity to catch up with quite a few people.
Yes, I did.
Over quite a few topics.
Yeah.
Did you ask anyone, if you know what's coming?
I do.
What their three favourite takeaways are? Actually, I'm going to ask you.
Okay,
on reflection of your experience at DPW, what are your three top takeaways from it?
I anticipated you would ask me this.
Thank you.
So I have prepared an answer.
Oh.
I think the first one is, we heard Matthias Gunzman say that right at the start, we are on the precipice of a massive change in procurement. So, you know, we need to embrace that, be ready for it, and throw ourselves headfirst into it. The second is, just don't believe the hype. Cut through, understand exactly how things are developing, where AI is really going to transform stuff, and work on embracing that stuff. But don't chase shiny things. Have it as part of a considered data and digital strategy. And the third one is people. People, absolutely the number one. You have to make sure that you're developing the capability, new capability, by the way, but you're developing that capability and you're driving in the adoption of new practices, ways of working, technology, but you're driving that in with change management as one of the key ways of doing that. So nothing's going to happen unless you take people along with you on this journey.
Fantastic. And next week on The Procurement Show, we're sending Jonathan to the International Plasticine Convention.
I'm looking forward to that.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and on Twitter, @Procurement Show. Visit us at theprocurementshow.com. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organizations around the globe. Copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved. Produced by Fresh Air Studios.